Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 72 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, you can discover strategies to help create a calm dog.
Part of that is learning self-control behaviors. So part of your clicker training, you can also teach them behaviors like wait.
And hear how one dog owner helped her dog back to health.
And then unfortunately, on Easter Saturday last year, he got away from my husband and ran across the road to catch up with me and my other dog and got hit by a car. It was really, really awful. I can still hear the howling now.
Buddy's diary is about his vacation to Scotland. And we catch up with a heel work to music partnership that was catapulted to fame by the programme Britain's Got Talent. But before all that, the Dogcast Radio News.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Many dog lovers help a dog in need and no one notices. But if you're a famous actress, it hits the news. Cameron Diaz recently stopped to rescue a German shepherd dog that had been injured. Apparently, Diaz looked after the dog at her house and put up a found German shepherd sign outside. Happily, the dog's owner spotted the sign and was reunited with her dog. Diaz even visited the dog as it was being treated at the veterinarian's.
We featured many studies highlighting the numerous benefits of dog ownership, but a recent study discovered one potential drawback. Reported in Respiratory Research, the study indicated that babies living at a home with a dog may be more likely to snore as an adult. The research was carried out in Sweden, Iceland, Norway and Estonia and involved almost 16,000 adults.
So you're going to blame it on your poor family pet then?
Well, not necessarily. It was also found that other occurrences such as spending time in hospital under the age of two for a respiratory infection or suffering badly with ear infections or coming from a large family can also be linked to adult snoring.
Well, talking of surveys, one carried out by pet insurance company PetGuard.co.uk shows that the partners of dog owners should beware because it's highly likely that they come below the dog in the pecking order. More than 15% of dog owners said they would end a relationship with someone who didn't get along with their dog. And for Lhasa Apso owners, that rises to 20%. When it comes to birthdays, 60% knew their dog's birthday, while only 45% had never forgotten a close relative's birthday. More than 1 in 10 owners held a birthday party for their dog, with miniature schnauzer owners splashing out the most on their dogs. Almost 40% shared their bed with their dog, showing exactly how much our dogs mean to us.
Clearly, owning a dog is a decision which has a huge impact on your life, so it's essential to pick a dog that fits your lifestyle. To help with that, the American Kennel Club has issued guidelines on what to consider. A dog is a long-term commitment, so make sure you and he will be as well matched as possible. Important areas include the temperament of a breed. Are you looking for a lively or a relaxed companion? Do you want him to bond closely with you or be everybody's friend? How much time will he have to tolerate alone? Other things to ponder are what size dog you can cope with, how much grooming you will be happy with, and whether you prefer a dog or a bitch, or would a puppy or a dog suit you? What is the health history of the breed, and can you afford insurance? For more information, visit www.akc.org.
And finally, news of a working dog who might well need his nose insured, as he is on the scent of bumblebees. Toby, a Springer Spaniel, is the world's first bee-sniffing dog, and is helping research into declining numbers of the insects at Stirling University in Scotland. Bumblebees live in small nests, often underground, and so are hard to find and study. Without Toby's help, that is, as he can sniff them out wherever they are. The bees are an essential part of the ecosystem, and if they continue to decline, it could have a negative impact on plants and other wildlife.
Well, let's hope Toby and the team are successful, and this isn't a story with a sting in the tail. And that's all from the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
A house without either a cat or a dog is the house of a scoundrel. Portuguese proverb.
You're
listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. I share my life with a very bouncy Labrador. And although I'm very glad that at almost 6 years old he is still full of energy and fun, I do sometimes wish he was a little calmer. So imagine my delight at coming across an article that promised to tell me how to help him be calmer. It was in the Whole Dog Journal that was very kindly sent to me by listener Karen Finkenbinder. And straight away, I wanted to interview the author, Pat Miller. After spending 20 years as a humane officer at the Marin Humane Society in California, Pat received her CPDT certification and now has her own training establishment called Peaceable Paws. She painted such a serene picture of her own pack of dogs that I knew others would be interested in and benefit from her calming advice. She says that some dogs are born calm, but a calm dog can also be made. So just how do we help our dogs achieve calmness?
Well, there's a number of areas that you can address to help your dog become calmer. The first and a hugely important part of the equation is making sure the dog gets enough exercise. At least in this country, many of our dogs are exercise deprived, and people don't realize that a walk on leash is not exercise for a dog. It's a good training opportunity. It's a nice social outing, but it doesn't even begin to touch their need for exercise.
That's so sad because, as you say, a lot of dogs, you know, it's once around the block or morning and night around the block, and that's it for some dogs, isn't it?
That is, and I know at least two of our four dogs would probably be impossible to live with if that's all the exercise they got. So ours help us for about an hour every morning, clean stalls in the barn, and while we're doing that, they're chasing their ball up and down the aisle and chasing each other up and down the aisle, and that's a good start for the day. For people who don't have a barn to play in, you can do much the same in your own home. If you have a hallway, you can toss a ball down the aisle. If you have stairs that are carpeted and you don't have a dog with a long back who's prone to back injury, you can do some careful play up and down stairs. My first Australian Kelpie, who was my first very high-energy dog, I would hike with her to the top of a steep hill and throw her ball down the hill and let her run down the hill and back up the hill several times to tire her out.
Yeah, yeah. Can it be sort of something that tires them out mentally, or, you know, are we just talking physical exercise here?
No, good point. Mental exercise is every bit as tiring as physical exercise, if not more so. And there are many, many different ways to exercise your dog mentally. One is through a process called shaping. There's a game we play called 101 Things to Do with a Prop, and we use a clicker. We do clicker training. So you teach your dog that the sound of the click means they just earned a treat. And then you set out some kind of prop. A cardboard box is perfect for that. And anything they do in relation to the box earns a treat. So if they look at the box, they get a treat. If they sniff the box, they get a click and treat. If they bite the box, they get a click and treat. And they start using their brain to figure out, well, what's going on here? What am I doing to get the clicks and treats? And they learn to offer lots of different behavior, and they exercise their brain at the same time.
I mean, we've used clicking with both our dogs, but particularly with our little Bichon, who I sometimes have trouble remembering there is a brain in that fluffy little head, you know. And I could not get her to do a down. And I talked to one of the trainers who was on the show and said, look, I can't do this, and I can't manipulate a small dog. And he suggested clicking. And it is amazing, the first behaviour she offered, when I just sat with my arms folded and looked at her like, well, what are you going to do? You know, having established clicking. And the first behaviour she did, she just lay down and looked at me. So, of course, I could click and give her a click. And it's just, it's like a light bulb moment, isn't it? You know,
It absolutely, clicking is wonderful. I used to train using more old-fashioned methods, and I would never go back. I adore clicker training.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. So they need mental or physical stimulation then?
Exactly, or a combination thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is learning self-control behaviors. So part of your clicker training, you can also teach them behaviors like wait, where they learn, it's a little bit zen, they learn that the fastest way to get something is to not try to get it.
Mm.
You can do that with a food bowl, where you hold the food bowl up and say wait, and then start to lower the bowl, maybe just a few inches, and as long as they don't get up, they get a click, and you raise the bowl back up and give them a treat, and gradually work your way down to the floor. If they do get up, you just say, oops, lift the bowl back up, no click, no treat.
Mm.
So again, they learn that the fastest way to get that coveted food bowl is to control themselves until they're told that they can have it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my dog's weakness is people. He just loves people, and he has to go and find out, you know, are you my friend? Are you going to pet me? And as soon as they stop petting him, he's like, oh, do it again, and he's nudged. So can I use the clicker in that situation as well?
You can. Part of your success there will require management, which is making sure he doesn't have the opportunity to mug people uncontrollably or without permission.
Mm.
So, for example, if you're out walking on the street, he's on leash, and someone approaches and says, oh, what a beautiful dog, may I pet him? You say, you may as soon as he sits.
Mm.
So that he learns that he has to sit to earn that good stuff. And then when he sits, you click and they can pet him, or you can pet him and feed him the treat, which actually focuses him more on you. But since in this scenario, it's someone asking to pet him, the click or a verbal marker, yes, tells him he did a good thing, and then the person, the reward there is getting the attention from the person.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one way. One of the things we do with clicker training is we teach what we call a default sit, which means they get lots and lots of reinforcement for sitting. And then when they're not sure what to do in a given situation, or when a situation isn't giving them the reinforcement they're looking for, they'll choose to offer a sit as their default behavior. So if you install that really, really well, then you've got a good shot at him choosing to sit when someone stops outside leash range and doesn't give him attention.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise helps there also. What I tell people is exercise your dog really well in your yard before you go for a walk on leash.
Hmm.
And then you've got a better shot at him offering good manners when someone approaches.
Yes.
Of course, it requires the cooperation of the people approaching also. and so sometimes you need to be a little bit assertive about insisting that they not pay attention to him if he's trying to jump on them.
Because sometimes you meet someone that is a dog person and the dog jumps up and they go, I don't mind, you know, and I'm guilty of that sometimes. But you do have
yep,
to... Suggest-
and then exactly. And then you say, I'm sorry, but I mind.
Yes.
Because I'm trying to teach him good manners. So it can be a challenge, and you're right. It's a delight having a dog who loves people, and then you have that challenge of not getting him to love them too much.
Yes, which can definitely be a challenge, definitely.
It can. So the more training you do helps there also. You can teach him, you know, we talked about the wait behavior. You can teach him when someone approaches, you can ask for the sit, the process we call... asking for incompatible behavior, because he can't sit and jump up at the same time.
Mm.
And if you've taught him to sit on cue and then ask him to wait, and he's learned to wait well, then you can also help him control himself when someone's approaching.
Yeah, yeah. My dog is quite strange in that way, because he's learned very early on, children you have to be careful with, and if children approach, he will lie down.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he would just lie there and they can touch his tummy, you know, and he's just like, great. But
wonderful.
He's like, adults are fair game, you know? So he does have that self-control, but he chooses when to apply it, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, so we know he has it. We just have to get him to extend it, generalize.
Yes, yes, yeah. Now, one of the things I've found is I've been doing sort of more training generally, and that really has switched his brain on.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So I guess that's another thing then. The more training you do in any way is going to help this, you know, when you give that weight command or whatever, that's going to help, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Because the more training you do, the better the communication between you and your dog, the more your dog's world makes sense to her, the more he or she can understand what's going on in the world and understand what it is that you're asking of him.
Now, you suggest another technique in the article that I read called Go to Your Place.
That's a training exercise that we do, and I like to teach it through shaping. You can also teach it through luring. But you have a place, and we use little rug samples that are maybe 2 feet by 3 feet, which are portable, so it's really nice. You can take them with you if you're going visiting. And you teach your dog that the cue, go to your place, means go lie down on your rug. And if you're going to teach it by luring, then, simply you say, go to your place, lure him to it, ask him to lie down, and then click and treat. If you're teaching it by shaping, you sort of start out like we were talking about with 101 things to do with a box, where you click him for looking at it, and then you toss the treat behind you so that he goes and gets the treat and is likely to move toward the mat again. And then you click him as he moves toward the mat and toss the treat behind you. And he continuously moves closer and closer to the mat until he's shaped himself onto it. You tend to get a stronger behavior using shaping than luring. I would say because it's coming from inside his brain instead of coming from the lure. So
yes.
He's thinking more about what he's doing.
Mm.
And then you can use that. You can use that, for example, you can teach him, if you have it really solidly on cue, when people come to your front door, you can ask him to go to your place so that rather than, mugging people coming in your door, he's lying politely on his mat waiting for the people coming to come give him a treat. Or you can even teach him that the doorbell or a knock on the door is the cue to go to his place, and then you don't even have to ask him.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Do you have any advice? I'm just thinking, because he will sit, but you can see him quivering and just thinking, oh, I so want to get to this person. And he will sit and quiver, or he'll be all over the person. So how do I get from that? I mean, is there any way that I can, or is it just practice to sort of get him to release gently, I guess I'm saying?
I would do lots of practice. If you're talking, are you talking about out in public or in your home?
In the house is the biggest problem, yeah. I'm just wondering how we get from that sort of, you're on your place, you've trained that, or the sit or the wait, and okay, now you can gently say hello.
You can use a tether, which is a nylon-coated cable with a snap on both ends, and you can attach the tether several different ways. You can screw an eye bolt into a stud in your wall, if you don't mind putting holes in your walls. You can wrap the cable around a heavy piece of furniture, depending on the size of your dog. That might be a grand piano or, something smaller. Or you can take a block of wood and screw that eye bolt into the block of wood and then slide the cable under a door and close the door. And then that holds the cable in place. And then when he's on his tether, you can have people come and greet him on the tether. And if he does jump up and try to greet them too enthusiastically, you've pre-instructed them that if he jumps up, they step back.
Yes.
And then when he sits or lies down, they can approach again. So he learns that he has to stay calm and in position in order for people to approach him.
Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant. Excellent.
It's actually, we use those tethers in our training center during our classes. So people with very energetic dogs have a way to secure their dogs without getting, jerked on and tugging on their dogs all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you've mentioned one way there that we can use a door to sort of control the dog. And there's another exercise that you recommend doing with dogs at doorways, isn't there?
We use that weight exercise that I talked about with the food bowl. We also use at the door. You start by walking up to the door and having your dog sit. And then you reach just a little bit, you tell him wait, and you reach just a little bit for the doorknob. And if he waits, if he doesn't jump up, you click and treat. And then reach further and further toward the doorknob with a click and treat each time as long as he sits. If he jumps up, it's an oops, and sit again. Oops is my word that means, ah, that behavior didn't earn a treat.
Mm.
It's much nicer than no.
Mm.
Because people tend to get angry when they say no.
Yes.
And it's really hard to say oops in an angry tone of voice.
Yes, you're right.
So we use oops until you can, you know, jiggle the doorknob, click and treat, open the door a crack, click and treat. Each time you say wait as you progress further and further until you can open the door all the way without him dashing out. And then sometimes you'll step through and close the door, which is his cue for, oh, I can move around now. Sometimes you'll step out and invite him to come out the door with you. But it's, again, it's a really good self-control behavior, and it's also useful. It's a good safety behavior to teach your dog not to dash out a door just because it's open.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've mentioned already sort of you get a good response from the dogs when you can put them in a situation where they choose, you know, they're deciding to, you know, do the behavior, which is the calmer option, you know, which is not the dashing up to people, you know, that they're developing self-control.
Right.
But you make a very interesting point that shut down is not the same as calm.
Correct. And old-fashioned methods are methods that use punishment or coercion, methods that are still unfortunately fairly popular in the United States. Choke chains, shock collars, loud verbal or harsh physical punishment. Those all teach a dog that the safest thing to do is nothing.
Mm.
So you have a dog who appears to be well-behaved and, in fact, by some definitions is well-behaved because he doesn't do anything. But you have a dog who's afraid to do things. When we're doing clicker training, we can always tell when we're working with what we call a crossover dog, which is a dog who was initially trained using those old-fashioned methods, because it's hard to get them to offer behaviors.
Oh.
They've learned the safest thing to do is nothing until you direct them or tell them what to do.
Mm.
So not the same as calm.
No.
It's more like learned helplessness, which is, if I do anything, something bad will happen, so I'll do nothing.
Yeah. Because, I mean, one of the things that struck me about this sort of helping them become calmer, yes, it's good for me and it's good for the owner, you know, you'd get this dog that people can come into the house, but it must be better for the dog.
Well, better for the dog. I mean, a dog who's out of control doesn't get to do as much, doesn't get to go as many places, doesn't get to experience as many things, and tends to get into trouble more, is more likely to get yelled at for being out of control. And to some degree, sometimes that hyperactivity is evidence of stress because the dog doesn't know what to do, so he gets active. Sometimes it's just because they're happy and energetic, which I suspect is the case with your lab.
Yes.
But some dogs are hyper-energetic like that because they're not sure what to do or they're stressed. When you see a dog, you know, pacing frantically, that's an example of hyperactivity as a result of stress.
Yeah. Buddy is generally laid back. He's a very, you know, chilled out dog, but it's just people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just loves them, and
people are very reinforcing for him.
Yes, yeah, and it's just, you know, well, they must have come to see him. They couldn't possibly be here to see me, you know.
And I can't believe they're ignoring me.
Yes, and he will, because I can remember when he was a very young puppy, and he was sort of trying to get my mother to notice him, and I said to her, "Just ignore him." And he just upped the ante because instead of sort of nudging at her legs, he just jumped his front paws onto her lap and he was like, "I'm here. I know you can't see me."
So, hey.
Yes.
And the problem with that, when we try to make a behavior go away by taking away the reinforcement, that's a process called extinction.
Mm.
And there's often what we call an extinction burst, which is that, hey, this used to work, how come it's not working now? And if you give in and reinforce your dog during that extinction burst, then you've just made it worse because you've reinforced that increased intensity behavior, so he'll he'll try that more quickly the next time.
Yeah. So I guess if your response to him jumping onto your lap is to push him, your hands are on him. And in
exactly,
a way,
that's reinforcing.
Yeah. So it's like a vicious circle, isn't it, then?
So, you really need to make sure people interacting with your dog understand, you know, that ignoring, even if you just sit there and don't pay attention to him, if he's jumping up and touching you, he's getting reinforced.
Yeah, yeah.
So you really have to turn yourself away so he can't jump on your lap or actually get up and walk away from him. And some dogs, when you do that, they'll jump on you from behind.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to actually walk through a door and close the door behind you, or practice on that tether we were talking about,
yes,
so they can't follow you and keep getting reinforced just by touching you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, now, in your article, you paint a lovely picture of your dogs and sort of the calm that reigns in your house. So could you tell us sort of about your own dogs?
We have four. The oldest is Missy, a Red Merle Australian Shepherd that we adopted just last fall.
Mm.
My husband is the director of the Humane Society here, and he was out on an investigation, and he sort of convinced the farmer that he didn't need this extra dog that he'd only had for a couple of weeks. And a couple of weeks later, the farmer surrendered her to the Humane Society, and we adopted her. So she's our newest.
Mm.
We also have Duffy, an 8-year-old Scottish Terrier that we adopted when we lived in Tennessee. He was running loose in a neighborhood for several months.
Mm.
And then Lucy, a Cardigan Corgi, who was surrendered to her by her owners to the shelter here when she was about 6 months old. I strongly suspect because of her energy level. And then Bonnie, what we call a Scorgy Doodle, Scotty Corgi, and we think Poodle, is 3 years old, and she was also adopted from the shelter.
So, and as you say, if you've got calm reigning with that mix of dogs and four dogs together anyway.
Correct.
You've proved it works, haven't you?
Well, it does work. We work at it. I mean, they get exercise every day, and that's a huge piece of why it works well.
Yeah, yeah. If people want to find out more about you, is there a website they can go to?
There is. It's www.peaceablepaws, that's peaceablepaws.com.
I've been trying one or two things out with Buddy after having that conversation with Pat. And he is improving. If you would like to find out more about Pat Miller, we have links on the Dogcast Radio site to her Peaceable Paws site and to the Whole Dog Journal, of which Pat is the training editor. Good luck getting calm. A lean dog shames its master. Japanese proverb. Buddy's diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. Something exciting has happened to me. I've been on a vacation. I've had weekends away before and even short breaks, but never a whole week's vacation. It was fantastic. We all got into the car and started driving, and we kept on driving, and we kept on driving, and we kept on driving. That was the worst bit, all the driving. It was worth it all when we got there, and we got lots of breaks for us dogs to take toilet trips and our people to buy yet more coffees. It took all day in the car to get to a place called Scotland. Scotland smells wonderful, so fresh and pure, and with the scent of so many different animals I've never smelt before. I love paddling, and I got to do loads of it in the sea and in a place I think they called Loch Ness. Though it didn't look a mess to me. It was huge, almost as big as the sea, and so chilly. And Star and I splashed about at the edge, fetching sticks, scrabbling in the gravel, and chasing each other through the water. We didn't go in too far. I mean, better safe than sorry. There's supposed to be a monster living in all that water. Everything in Scotland seemed to be big, and we visited someone called Ben Nevis, or was it Glen Nevis? I can't quite remember, but I know he lived at the top of a very big hill. Rather than take the easy way and run and sniff and generally enjoy ourselves climbing up the very big hill, my people took the hard way and we had to cram all of us into a small glass box that rattled and swung in the wind as it carried us upwards. It was windy, and we were dangling from a wire. It was quite alarming, even for a brave dog like me, but I bore it dogfully. Something that took me by surprise was a Scottish animal called a bagpipe. It has no legs, but many arms, and people carry it around, which is quite kind, I suppose. But they must squeeze it dreadfully, because it squeals and wails and screeches pitifully, fit to burst a dog's sensitive eardrums. We went to a Highland Games, although it was nowhere near as high as the land where Ben Nevis lives. Highland Games is lots of people throwing and running and generally doing odd things. My people seemed entertained, so I snoozed contentedly beside them. Then, without warning, a whole bunch of people walked past, most of them squeezing a bagpipe really hard, making them scream and wheeze and shriek with no mercy. Some even had drums which they hit really hard to make the bagpipes more frightened than they already must have been. It startled me more than anything else I've ever encountered. I shot to my feet and stared, and every hair along my back stood on end. Star stood up and stared too. It took a long time to fall back off to sleep, and to this day I still have bad dreams about those poor mistreated animals crying out for help. I do like Scottish people, as they're extremely friendly to dogs. Everywhere we went, Star and I were made a fuss of. The best time was on a boat out on Loch Ness. I have discovered that I am a multilingual dog. Most of the people on the boat spoke to me in strange words I've never heard before, but I knew as clearly as I needed to that they liked me, and a belly rub is the same in any language. I did loads of fun things on vacation. Walked on the Cairngorms, where there are reindeer. I don't know what they are, but they smell terrific. I saw red squirrels, and they smell just the same as the cheeky grey ones at home. I walked on a beach where you can see dolphin, whatever they are. I couldn't smell them over the salty aroma of the sea. The best thing about my vacation is that my pack spent all day and night together. There was no being left alone while they go off and have fun. It was all for one and one for all. I even got the odd taste of fish and chips or a tiny lick of an ice cream. Not enough to make me run to fat, just enough to make it a perfect vacation. Now I've had one, I can't wait to go on another vacation. So the only problem now is where to choose. I'll have to go and have a serious think. Till next time.
A righteous man cares for the needs of his animal. Proverbs 12:10. Now we hear about Monty, a dog who's had an eventful life and his share of luck, both good and bad. But he's certainly lucky with the owner he has now, Joanna Brown. But she isn't the first owner Monty's had.
I understand from paperwork when I got him that he was rescued from Ireland at 10 weeks and brought over to England, because they take a lot of rescues out of Ireland and bring them over here. So as a puppy, he started off being sent out to his first home. And then within a year, he'd had three or four homes and come back to the rescue centre each time. So I got him at 15 months, having had four homes.
Good grief.
And he was very, very stressed. And poor thing. He was a real, real mess when we got him, and a lot of behavioural issues. Yeah, so no, I'm not the first home.
No. And what do you know what the reason was for him going back?
Yeah, a few things that the rescue centre said was that he tended to guard the children or guard the mother. He growled a lot. He was very over the top as well. He was literally bouncing off the walls with anxiety and hyperactivity.
Gosh.
He'd not been given any basic training, so he couldn't walk on the lead. He chased cats. And it all just sort of got on top of him, and he started growling and biting.
Yeah.
So not breaking skin, but almost out of fear, snapping at people. So
yeah.
Those were the reasons, really. I have to say, I fell in love with his cute little face, so which I think had been his saving grace up until then. So, yeah, we took him. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was how old when he came to you?
15 months, we think, at the very most. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you set about sort of giving him some security and boundaries sort of thing.
Yeah, I thought the boundaries, consistency, a lot of training, a lot of time and patience. And goodness, you know, I used to say to my friends that I love him dearly, but I really don't like him. He's such hard work.
Yes.
It just feels like you take two steps forward and one back, or some days three back. But he's very rewarding because he's made me look at lots of different ways of training and open my eyes to other training methods and things, which is why, you know, I really do love him. And I like him now as well for all those things that he's opened up to me.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a very honest and useful thing to say and for others to hear, you know, because you do get, you know, I've interviewed trainers before and they've said, don't take it personally. You know, they're not doing it to you.
Spite you.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And also for him, I guess he felt he just had to try really hard to be him because he'd had so many homes before. I think he got into a real lot of patterns of behaviour and was just carrying on with those because that's what he thought he knew best. So, it was up to me to show him a different way.
Yeah. So he's found his new home with you. So we hope now he's found his happy ending and everything's going to be
rosy. Yes, absolutely. He's
rosy.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah. So what happened then?
Well, I spent a good 4 or 5 months doing all this training. I got him walking nicely on the lead. He was listening more to me, a lot less reactive. And I was just really, really proud of the progress he'd made. And then unfortunately on Easter Saturday last year, he got away from my husband and ran across the road to catch up with me and my other dog and got hit by a car.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it was really, really awful. I can still hear the howling now.
Yeah.
I didn't actually see it happen, but I heard the yelping and I turned round and he was wagging his tail furious at me. It was obvious his leg was broken, but he was so pleased to see me and catch up with me, and he just hobbled over where I was sort of frozen in shock and collapsed on the floor still wagging his tail, which is the part really, really sweet, but it does bring a tear to the eye to think about it. So he had to go to the Royal Veterinary College in Hatfield for a week for them to pin and plate his leg. I have to say they're absolutely fantastic up there. They're really, really kind and supportive. So I was happy he was in very good hands up there. And then obviously he came back a week later, and I rather naively thought that having fixed his leg he would be fixed, but he actually had an awful lot of emotional and mental trauma. He spent his first few days back just growling at anyone who came near him. He couldn't cope with any noises. You know, little things like that. His whole body was hunched up. He looked like he had permanent headache. It was a very tough time.
Yeah. You sort of started to find out how you could help him, didn't you?
Yes. About this time, I carried on with the training that I was doing, but it didn't seem to have the same effect. Most of my training is Jan Fennell based, and it was very good for him when I first got him. But hers is for non-medical related behaviours, and I rather felt that his were medically related now. He just seemed to be in constant pain. Even though his leg was broken, he was in pain. He had an awful lot of tension in his body, and I could tell that by the way he moved and the way he held his head. So if we think about it in human terms, if we've got backache or headache, we're a lot more irritable, aren't we? I know I am.
Yes.
So it's quite understandable that a dog would be more irritable, for example, or any other animal. So I started to have a look around to see what I could find to help him. I was fortunate enough to be asked to join a forum called Compassionate Canine and Communication. Actually, it's called Network for Compassionate Canine Care and Communication. And I straight away started dominating the board with Monty stories and please help and what does everyone think. And they were fantastic. They were very supportive and got me to look at lots and lots of things like diet. I put him on a natural diet to help detox his body. They put me in touch with some T-Touch people to have a look at him, a canine massage therapist to have a look at him. And I didn't even know chiropractors and massage people existed for dogs. So I was prepared to try everything and anything, and I did.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what did you find worked best with him?
Well, a lot of people have asked me this, and I can't put my finger on it. I think it was everything together, really. The chiropractor certainly pushed his body back into the shape that it should be in. Obviously, an impact will have knocked some joints out of line, and that he sees them regularly just to make sure he's okay. So that relieved a lot of tension. The massage therapist, she comes regularly to see him, and she's very, very good. Where he didn't walk on one leg for a long time, it obviously affects the muscles in your body. And then if we've broken a leg or we limp, we often get backache, and it refers elsewhere in our body. So he has a massage to help him feel confident enough to use his leg. The diet, actually, I was quite surprised. The diet really, really, really changed him. And after a couple of weeks, I just noticed him being a bit more relaxed and less hyperactive. So I was really impressed with that.
And how did you change his diet?
I was on a kibble before.
Yeah.
And he seemed to turn his nose up quite a bit at it. The forum that I was on recommended looking at different foodstuffs, more natural food. So I had to look at raw feeding, and I do raw feeding for my dogs now. So I'm in control of what they eat. So
yeah.
There's no additives or preservatives. I know exactly what quality food they're eating.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with that. And actually, I quite enjoy providing different tasty meals for them.
Yes, yeah. It's nice to nourish them, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Yes, yeah. And if you consider we are what we eat, so why shouldn't the same apply for animals?
Yeah, that's fascinating that you saw a change in him so fast.
Yes, it could be a combination of everything that I did, but his coat has changed. His coat was really coarse and dry. It was like straw, but it's gone lovely and glossy and shiny now, and it's almost changed texture. It's changed texture as well. The old stuff's falling out, and the new stuff's growing through.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Now, I know you found the T-Touch very helpful as well. He found the T-Touch very helpful.
Yes,
didn't
he did. Yeah, I found the T-Touch fascinating. Yes. I started with a book and applied what I could do out of the book. I mean, he wouldn't even let me touch his back or his hips without snapping and running away. It was very, very sore for him to be touched around those areas. And certainly with the massage therapist, we used to have to muzzle him and tread very, very carefully. So I really started off very, very light touches with the back of my hand, for example, and just very short periods of time. So, I started with the book. And then October, the forum arranged a trip for a half-day workshop with Sarah Fisher in Bath. And she's the head of T-Touch for the UK. So I jumped at the chance, really.
Yeah.
So, we all set off down there in Bath. She's also a member of our forum, and she'd given me some advice on Monty on where he could have tension patterns. T-Touch, but if you assess your dog or your animal, you can see by certain different textures of coat where they are on their bodies, and it fur sticks up at funny angles. I mean, I'm not a practitioner, and I'm not probably doing this a great deal of justice, but it is amazing what you can see in your dog just by looking at them, assessing their bodies, the way they stand or hold their heads.
Yeah.
It can all indicate patterns of tension, and by unlocking those, it can affect their behaviour.
Yes, yeah. Now, was that when Sarah met Monty?
That was the first time she met him.
Yes.
And she really liked him, even though he barked the whole way through her workshop. And it was quite an intimidating day. There were about 10 of us and probably about 12 dogs, I think. And he found it quite stressful looking at them all. And quite often with him, if one dog barks, he'll start barking. You won't know what he's barking at.
Yes.
He'll be barking. He's got that kind of reactive dog. But, yeah, Sarah really liked him. Which was nice for me, because I always felt that I was struggling with him. I said I loved him, I struggled with him because I couldn't get him to behave the way I wanted him to behave. And it was nice for me that someone else liked him.
Yes.
Sounds an odd thing to say, I imagine. But, she really liked him. And we were fortunate after that to go back and have a one-to-one with her. As she liked him so much. So we went back in December, and she showed me some clicker training with him and how to use clicker training to get him to accept being touched. So that's very much reward-based training as well. And we did some of the groundwork exercises that she teaches, and that was really, really interesting as well.
Yeah.
So that's like walking over poles, getting the dog to be with him, to walk very slowly and concentrate on what they're doing and lift their legs up. And using the same sort of equipment that you use in agility,
yes,
but just doing it slowly and calmly, so they're looking at what they're doing, they're paying attention to you. and they're lifting their legs up properly, and it all helps release tension in their bodies and allow their muscles and tensions to repair.
Gosh, that sounds fascinating.
It was an amazing day for me, and I remember feeling quite emotional about it because I really feel that this is a real breakthrough, and I almost felt that Monty actually started to like us. We always rather felt he didn't like us very much.
But
that's going back to what you said, that I was taking it very personally.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But, all credit to you for persevering, because if the dog is being difficult and you have issues bonding with him and you feel the feedback you're getting is he doesn't like you, you do. You know, it's very hard then.
It was very hard. I did feel at some point, so I'd never feel like I'd ever give up, but I just felt, I'm really just managing the situation with him. I'm just keeping him safe from himself, really. But, I'd really love to bond with him. I'd really love to feel that he liked us. And it really started to come together after I started doing T-Touch properly with him. And obviously, as I said before, I'm not a practitioner, but anybody can do the touches and a little bit. A little bit often really helps. So I did a bit with him every day, and he's really good now. He's got lots of flexibility through his back and his hips, where previously we couldn't even touch him. So obviously now his tension has gone through there. He's much less reactive to people walking past his back end or going to pat him on the back, for example.
Yeah. Oh.
So that is really rewarding.
Yeah. Now, you say Sarah Fisher took to him, but she took him so much, she wanted him included in her book, didn't she?
I know. I was so proud. she asked if he would go back and model for her next book. And actually, we took our other dog back as well. So they're both in her next book, which is due out in September. And I'm going to be so proud when I see
the photos. Excellent, yes.
He was actually a very good model.
Yeah.
He stood still and really posed for the photos, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a very proud moment.
Yes, yeah. And he's a beautiful dog, and there'll be a picture on the website so people can go and have a look at him. He is gorgeous. And he enjoyed the whole process then?
Oh, yes. I was really surprised, because normally he's quite enjoys his own space, and he can be quite fidgety. But, he stood still and he posed, and when the cameras were rolling, he was doing exactly what he was supposed to. It was very sweet to watch. It was like he knew he had the job to do.
Oh, bless.
I'm thinking he may have a career in it.
Yes. And how is your relationship with him now?
It's so much better. It's really, really lovely. I feel like I understand him. I feel that he understands what I need from him in terms of behaving in certain situations. I mean, he's never going to be perfect. There is no such thing as a perfect dog out there, realistically. Everyone, loves their dogs deeply and thinks they're perfect, but there's always going to be one or two little things that they do that's not perfect. But as far as I'm concerned, I love him dearly. I think he's wonderful. And I'm so grateful for him coming into my life, because he's taught me so much.
Yeah.
And hopefully from that I can help other people as well who are in similar situations.
Yeah.
I think it's true to say there's a lot of animals out there who may be behaving badly because they're in a bit of pain. Even things like rough play with dogs can upset their bodies and give them muscle tension or skeletal tensions.
I think it will have helped a lot of people. I mean, you've been very honest. And I do think that it will help a lot of people that hear this. And maybe they're struggling with their dog,
Yes, that's one of my main reasons for wanting to do this interview. I mean, there must be lots of people out there frustrated by their dog, feeling that they haven't bonded with them or found a way to train them. And I just want them to know that anything is possible if you just look for a way that works with works for their dog. And certainly I'm happy to answer questions on our forum, as is the other members, and make suggestions to them.
If you have problems with your dog, trainer Jo could help you find the answer. You can read about the services she offers at iwantahappyhound.co.uk. And there's a beautiful photo of Monty on the Dogcast Radio site. If you would like to go and take Jo and the other experts up on the offer of advice, click on the link to the N4C site. To be followed home by a stray dog is a sign of impending wealth. Chinese proverb. Buddy and I have been trying out a variety of activities, and for the past 3 months we've been rehearsing a heel work to music routine. I was nervous enough about performing in front of everyone, But when I discovered that the competition would be judged by Kate Nicholas, my nerves got worse. Kate is the human half of the amazing partnership that is Kate and Gin. The dancing duo entered the talent show Britain's Got Talent and made it through to the final 10. Obviously, this has changed their lives and focused media attention on them. I grabbed a quick interview with Kate. You've been performing today. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I don't think I enjoy it as much as Gin does, though.
And obviously you now get a lot more attention than you used to. Have you both taken to that?
Well, we all take it in our stride and it's quite amazing, really.
Yeah, because the kids are all over you, aren't they, asking for autographs and...
Yeah, that's really nice.
So obviously everybody wants to know your story and what's been happening, and you've written a book.
Yeah, I've written a book.
Yeah. And what's in the book?
It's about me and Gin, our life together, and then it teaches you how to train a dog like Gin.
Oh, right. So there's guidance in there how to do Heel Work to Music?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if someone wants to start at Heel Work to Music, what's the best thing, you know, activity to start with?
Just getting your dog to watch you and follow you around, and then you can start integrating moves into that. As long as you've got that attention span, it works really well.
Yeah, yeah. And, for example, once you've worked with Gin and you've taught her various behaviours, is it then that she knows them? Like, for example, if I worked with her and you worked with Buddy, would you do as well? And would she work for me? Or is it very much like the partnership?
Well, Gin only really works for me. She ignores everyone.
And how did Gin come into your life? Did you want a puppy, and how old were you? What happened?
Well, I was 9, nearly 10 when I got Gin, and I'd always wanted a dog of my own because the family had always had Welsh Terriers, and I'd seen the collies at agility shows, and I'd always wanted a collie.
Yeah.
So that's when Gin came, surprise, one day.
Aww. And did you want to do agility originally, was that?
Yeah.
And how did she do at agility?
She's not too bad at agility, very fast, and I can't keep up with her. But
yes, I know the feeling. And what else has she done? Have you gone through the Good Citizen scheme?
Yeah, she's done the puppy to gold in Good Citizens. She's also a flyball dog and was in the British flyball team last year.
Oh, wow.
Like champion team.
Yeah. So she's multi-talented.
Yeah, and she can do working trials. She can do quite a lot of things.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you wanted a border collie. You know, is it sort of, are border collies more likely to succeed, particularly, you know, Heel Work to Music? Is that more, you know, are they more likely to succeed in that?
I don't think that's really true, because they're like some amazing dogs of other breeds, and I think it just all depends on the bond you have with that dog and how you get to know each other and have fun together.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're very motivated, because as we were waiting outside the field, if you are together, it seems that you're practicing, aren't you?
Yeah. It's an ongoing process, really. You just need to keep playing with your dog, and your dog loves it. And
Yeah. And now you've got other dogs around you, so do you work with any of those?
Well, Gin was my first ever dog, and she's like solely my own dog, but I have had a go with all the family dogs.
Yeah. And is Gin still the best?
Yeah, well, I think because we're such a partnership, and me and Gin are like always together, and she ignores everyone else. I think all the other dogs seem to be everyone in the family, but Gin's just mine.
Yes, yeah. And tell us, when is the book out?
The book is out 6th of October.
The book is called Kate and Gin, and is published by HarperCollins. So if you'd like to learn the secrets of training a dog that Simon Cowell reckoned was better than Lassie, now's your chance. It was wonderful to see that despite being a talented performer, Gin is still very much a normal dog, and that she not only shares her home with several other dogs, but also guinea pigs, hamsters and ferrets. Kate and Gin delighted the crowd with a Heel Work to Music display, and I was delighted when Kate awarded us fourth place in the competition. Buddy, of course, took it all in his stride. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you do when a chihuahua sneezes? Get a really small handkerchief.